So exciting to hear that today. The first time since 1945 the Cubs have won a World Series game. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. It is pretty late. We continue our True Blue Playoffs Plus coverage, which was sponsored by Wintrust, the Cubbies' place for home for checking, and Sloan Water Connects Us. Joining us again is Mark Carmen and Adam Hogue, Andy Mazur. And now in studio is the cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, Scott Sandes. I'm not calling you political cartoonist because you've also done some fun cultural Cubs baseball lately, cartoons as well. And, you know, you're very good at picking a battle, and I'm excited because Carm has a bone to pick with our Joe Maddon.
So here's my thing, guys. I love Joe Maddon. I hope he's the manager of the Chicago Cubs for however long he wants to be the manager of the Chicago Cubs. However, we're in the World Series. You look out on the mound tonight. You see big, burly Jake Arrieta, no sleeves, dealing, given all sorts of effort. And then you look in the Cubs dugout, and there's Joe Maddon, and he's got a winter coat on. He's got a ski hat on. He's got his mittens on. That's no way to be in the World Series, man. Your guy's out there. He's sleeveless.
Yeah, but he's not running around. He's not moving the way Jake has to.
This is top five worst Carm take ever.
I like this fuzzy little winter hat.
It might be the worst. It might be number one.
I like his pullover and his jacket. Look at, how about Javi and his Blue Man Group?
Set a tone. You're the manager. We're not thinking about the weather. Mm-hmm. We're not thinking about the fact that it's October. We're not thinking about the fact that daylight savings is going to be coming up in a matter of moments. I am one with my team. My team is one with me. And I'm not going to dress like I'm a polar bear.
I see your lips are moving, but I'm really not hearing this.
Yeah, this is an interesting take on the moment.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nobody's
it bugged
listening.
You.
Literally no one.
His attire bugged you. Adam, you're the only one who's not. You're stunned into silence.
I am. Do you know the difference between playing and not playing?
Yes.
The body temperature
is between like 32 and 65.
We had a doubleheader at Brother Rice once, okay? And it was in the 30s that day.
Okay?
Yeah. And they sat me for game one. I sat there freezing.
Different.
It was awful.
Different.
And then game two I played, and it felt like it was like 60 degrees outside.
Different. First of all.
How's it different?
Well, first of all.
It was colder.
First of all, it wasn't 30 today.
It was 40.
It was almost 50.
No, it was 43 at game two.
It was a breeze off the lake.
And it got colder throughout the game.
43 is not 30.
And it started raining.
And I know that Joe is not a young man. I do want him to be healthy, and I don't want him to get pneumonia. But just a little, you know, hey.
What if it comes out tomorrow that Joe Maddon has pneumonia?
Well, he can't. Well, it won't be because he wasn't warm enough. He clearly was bundled up enough.
I like to see my manager not looking like he's completely
take care
in Alaska.
You're fleece shaming him. I mean, this is
I am.
Fleece shaming.
Does it surprise you that this is the guy that picks on Jay Cutler for his body language?
Oh, I'm not the only one that does.
He's not. I do that all the time.
Yeah. And by the way, this take was not just brought to you by At the Carm. This was brought to you by all the people at the establishment that I watched. Not all of them, but there was many people tonight watching. They were like, "Come on, Maddon,
harping on Maddon for his gear."
Yes, get a little. Come on, you know you're too bundled up.
That's when you know the game is going well. The people can turn their attention
when you're
to
looking
Joe
for
Maddon.
Things to nitpick.
At least we know the source of this now. It's the two drunk guys that were sitting next to him at the bar when he was watching the game.
And I sat.
Now it makes sense.
And they must have bought him a beer.
They were not drunk.
Were you guys all outside too watching the game?
Yeah, where
in
were
short
you?
Sleeves?
Yeah, where's your team spirit? You should be out in the cold like our players are.
Esmeralda, you know, if you're going to jump in here with this bashing of Carm, I was outside today. I did not go ski hat winter coat look. I was tough Carm.
It was chillier and clearer.
It was warmer,
For more hot takes, visit At the Carm on Twitter.
Please do. Follow me on Twitter.
Oh, someone has a bone to pick with Carm.
Oh,
they're,
nice.
They're bone picking right back at you.
Bring it on.
They're going to nitpick your nits as well. Susan, what do you want to tell Carm?
Hi, I was listening to Joe Maddon tonight after the game was over on one of the CSN, and I just said to my sister, I was talking to her before, and I said, I think he's got a bad cold or something or a cold coming on. He didn't sound good tonight. Mm-hmm. I think he has the start of a good cold, so better be careful what you say about him. He has to dress warm.
Okay, now,
keep him in good health.
Susan, if you have that on good authority, if you are sitting with a nurse or a doctor, whoever you just said you were sitting with, and you sense a cold, then I do stand corrected, and I do apologize.
Okay, I hope doubt he doesn't that. Have a cold. We want him to stay healthy, but really, I had just said it to my sister a half hour ago on the telephone, chatting with her. So anyhow, I do think he has the start of a cold, so he better just warm.
Okay.
There you go, Susan.
Okay,
we're just looking out.
You guys are great. Bye.
Thank you, Susan. Thank go you, Cubs. Susan. Thank you.
This officially sounds like a Chicago post-game show now.
If he has a cold,
we are analyzing the body temperature of the manager.
I can't believe he had bigger problem with that than Javi's like bodysuit that he was wearing. I mean, did you see his first hit and he was running? His helmet slid off of his head because it was too slick.
Well, and that's the point that I'm getting to further, Patty, because if the manager is showing that he's freezing, then you can have Javi wearing his winter clothes and then Jorge Soler looks to go winter look like, oh, we're freezing cold. You know what? Forget about the temperature. You're in the World Series. I don't care if it's 43 or 103.
The kid's from Puerto Rico.
I don't care where he's from. Yeah, let's go.
Matt's from Florida.
Time to go.
You know what? Actually, I do have one point that can support you a little bit.
Thank you.
Game 2 in 2005, it was like low 40s and raining that entire game. Were you there?
I was.
Yeah. So you know.
Yes.
He still has a cold from that game.
I wasn't cold at all, though.
You know why?
Because adrenaline. It was just the adrenaline and the moment. Mm-hmm. So, okay, maybe you have a point.
And Lloyd Rutsky, one of the great vendors of all time and diehard White Sox fan, he no matter what the temperature is, he's always in the short. He always has the dress sock and the shoe.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. So no matter what the temperature is, Lloyd Rutsky is ready there to perform his beer sales. And I expect the same thing from the Chicago National League Ball Club in the World Series against the Cleveland Indians. It's going to be great weather this weekend.
Look,
so.
You have a problem with Joe Maddon wearing a ski cap and his puffy jacket. I have a problem with ball players who wear pants that are too long and look like they're going to trip over them.
Here.
They're tucked in their shoes. So I guess we can nitpick all we want.
Was that Wilson Contreras that had those on tonight?
Yeah, they designed those now. There's a little notch in there that they could put under the back cleat so that it goes
hooks
underneath the shoe.
Like spats? They have pants spats?
No, I think they
might
be.
That's not that cool.
It's just weird. I don't know. Everyone's a little different. I want to ask, since we're talking about uniforms and things like that, let's take a break here, but I want to come back and talk a little bit about that. Superstitions, but also the pitcher's jersey you guys were talking about, whether or not he was going to wear, because I saw a close-up of his stitches. It was a dark jersey. So we're talking about the Cubs World Series. First win since 1945. They come back on Friday. We have True Blue Playoffs Plus coverage with Andy Mazur, Adam Hoge, and Mark Carmen. It was sponsored by Wintrust, the Cubs' home for checking, and Sloan Water connects us. Also joining us is Scott Stantis from the Chicago Tribune. He is the political cartoonist, but lately it's been fun to see his Cubs cartoons. More after this on 720 WGN. Join us anytime, 312-981-7200. Am I reading this correctly, Carm, that about your travel, possible travel for you on Game 6 and 7?
I haven't seen that. What does it say?
Do you not get this email? Do you not know this? Have they not spoken to you?
I know there's a potential that I may get to go to Cleveland for 6 and 7. I don't know.
Wow.
That's what I'm reading in my email just now. That my work emails, I don't know until I get here. And I'm a little backed up.
When was that email sent?
October 24th. Monday, October 24th.
Mm. Yeah, Adam and I volunteered you, by the way.
Mm-hmm. You wanted to get rid of me, didn't you?
Get this guy out of here. Hanging out.
Listen, I hope that we're going to do the exact same thing on Sunday night that we did on last Saturday night.
That was fun.
Where I'll be out at the park, getting a ton of stuff, and we'll come back here and have a party, and the Cubs will have won the World Series.
I am driving down and crashing your show if
if that happens, I'm sorry, we're going all night.
I will be. I'm coming down. I'm probably going to watch. I should watch the game here. I don't see any reason not to watch the game. Well, that brings me to my question of the night. Where did everyone watch the game? 312-981-7200. And does it affect where you're going to watch the rest of the games? Because I am going back to the Gale Street Inn. We are not going to the place we went to last night, even though I love it. It now has the sort of, it smacks of bad luck, even though it has nothing to do with the outcome of the game. Andy, you watch here at WGN.
Yeah, I have a reserved seat in Studio A on 7th floor.
Mm-hmm.
Right
two
in front
giant
of one of the big
screens.
Two giant ones. I have the two giant screens on, one to the left, one straight in front of me.
Don't you sit like in the middle? No,
I sit right when you walk in the studio.
All right. Yeah. So that's where I know where to find you.
I've been
you.
There every game of the postseason except for two.
I will bring you a strawberry sprinkled donut.
Nice.
On a Friday night. Adam, where'd you watch the game?
Tonight?
Yes.
I watched the first four innings at home, then drove down and watched the rest with Andy.
There you go. And he let you sit in the studio with him?
Oh, yeah.
So he allows guests.
Yeah, yeah, Andy's fine. It's this guy Carm that like needs to be in a pitch black room with no lights on.
I don't like a lot of distraction.
You can have my office. My office is no windows.
Yeah,
yeah.
See, I used to be like that. I still love the team. I mean, they're still my team, and I get a little crazy when they win. I mean, I told you, I couldn't speak for 15 minutes after last Saturday. I mean, it just kind of hits you, you know?
So good. Such good stuff. Where did you watch tonight?
Tonight was at the Daily Bar and Grill, Wilson.
In Lincoln Square?
Yes, Wilson, okay. Wilson and Lincoln.
That is nice.
It was, I had a nice...
At the bar?
At the bar. Okay. We had a good crew over there tonight. It was really actually a great crowd of just solid people watching intently and cheering at the right times. And not it wasn't crazy. Delicious little grilled buffalo chicken sandwich and a little salad. But I'm going to be at Wrigley over the weekend. I think the key for me, guys, if I may.
Please.
Was that I just had before the game tonight, I cleaned all the clothes out of my car. I cleaned my apartment.
No, you didn't.
I mean,
that must have taken you 5 hours. I've seen your trunk.
I've
also seen the trunk of your car.
He didn't say trunk.
He said out of the car.
The
trunk might be a different part of the car.
It wasn't in disaster zone territory that you've seen before. This was like moderate. But I had like maybe 6 sport coats at my other job that I brought all back. I hung everything up.
Nice.
Everything was just well done. I got down on the ground. I got some dust up. The whole thing, I made my bed. And then right when the game started, I just stood in front of my television. I watched Dexter Fowler roll out. I screamed profanity at him, and then I went to the bar. That's
appropriate.
Carm calls that Wednesday.
Yeah.
Happy Wednesday. But, stress cleaning.
But
that's
I think for me, I just got to be active before the game. I got to be in a moment. I got to get myself going. And then when it comes, then we're ready to go.
I was in traffic before the game. It was a brutal day for traffic. Where were you, Scott, watching the game tonight?
I was Manly. Manly Place. It was a 6-course French dinner at Glenn's Tavern.
Wow.
Oh, very manly.
Yes. Hosted by a sommelier who was telling us about the wine and...
Yeah, most Cubs fans have a sommelier. Cubs fans often have someone telling them which wine.
It was interesting.
Did you not watch the game over there?
We did. No, they had the game on. That was made it hilarious. It's like, here we have a 1986 Bordeaux. Yes!
didn't sommelier start in right field tonight? Oh, wait, that was Soler. Sorry.
He was bundled up.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Too much fun. Yeah,
that was a weird moment. But they won, so
I have to go back. I'm going back to the Gale Street Inn on Friday night.
That's probably a different experience.
It was great. It was, you know, David Player was there. We had Elliot Serrano, Michelle Homme. We had a lot of the show regulars at the bar. And it was a great collection. It was weird because we had a Sox fan, we had a Cardinals fan at the bar. Like they were all coming out. They didn't have any emotion invested in the game, which was unsettling. Because I don't know if you know this about me, but I scream a lot.
Good.
It's funny because I'll scream and then go, "Oh my God, that was me." I have a guttural scream.
Well, I'm just hung out with John Cass this morning, who is a Sox fan and hates the Cubs with a white-hot passion.
He really does.
Yes, he does.
And he's not alone. It's just bizarre.
Oh, yeah. There's a friend of mine on Facebook, Joey Villagomez, who's a White Sox fan, a stand-up comic, and will not take his foot off our throats when it comes to just slamming us and calling us all kinds of names.
Okay.
I don't get that much hatred. Did you have that much anger toward Sox fans
no,
in 2005?
No. Yes. My brother's a Sox fan, Carmen? So I kind of had to be nice.
I didn't have anger towards the Sox fans. I just didn't want them to win. Hey,
before you guys go, anything? I don't want to leave anything on the table, Carm.
I want to ask a question before we go. Do you put this out to the crew here? Would you like to see Sammy Sosa at Wrigley Field over this weekend?
No.
There's nothing to do with this.
No.
Come back in April.
Throw out the first pitch. No.
He'd make it about himself. Nope.
Has he been around?
Why
Sammy?
Left?
Yeah.
Because they haven't had him around
because
forever.
He's the greatest Cub of all time.
More after this on 720 WGN. Because when something's wrong, we just have to go. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Scott Santis is giving me a piece of baseball trivia that isn't quite registering in my head. I'm sorry, what were you saying, Scott?
No, I was just saying that Terry Francona, the manager of the Indians, this is the first World Series game as a manager he's lost.
How many World Series games has he managed?
Nine.
Yeah, it would be 10.
With tonight's game. So he had won 9 previously.
10. He's 9-1.
Done.
That's amazing.
He's done.
He's just crying right now like a...
Oh, yeah,
like
I'm
a,
sure that's
like
what he's doing.
Like a 3-year-old child.
They're making their plans for the next game, strategizing, seeing how they're going to go up against Hendricks. It's all good.
You can't.
I know. Well...
Don't show up.
I'm not going to get cocky. It's not my place to get cocky. My place is to be excited as a fan, to believe, to be all in.
It has been amazing. I'm getting calls from all over, from people I haven't heard from in years. So, you know, just say, hey, good for you. I'm like, you're welcome.
Good for you.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. I worked very hard this year to get to this point. Esmeralda, I'm getting people asking me for tickets.
Are you really?
Thinking that because I work for WGN. that perhaps I have access to tickets. I do not. I've only been to one.
Then why am I on
game.
This show?
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you think was that the lure? If I keep showing up, Patty might give me tickets. Apparently, the ones that I would possibly use.
World Series tickets.
As if there are spares. Somehow. By the way, let's talk about this for a moment because it came up again today. The offer that the aldermen all were given to buy tickets for the playoffs at face value, and I'm of two minds of this. One, they did not reach out and ask for them. So when they were offered the tickets, they, of course, said yes. And then when it became public, there was an ethics committee that said, hey, this is not quite right. It sniffs of corruption. So you are no longer eligible to buy tickets at face value. The problem being that, for me, the bigger problem is, like, why embarrass them? I mean, like, they weren't doing anything wrong. They were offered that. But then they started complaining and whining, and then it became ugly. That's...
Oh, it got ridiculous. One of the aldermen, she was there whining, saying, oh, this is so wrong. We were paying for them. And besides, they were lousy tickets anyway.
Yeah, I'll take your lousy tickets. Yeah. I'll take your lousy face value tickets. I think what would have been cool is if any of them at some point had donated them to charity, had given them to somebody who perhaps was really a big fan, something along those lines of, you know, that would have been something to turn it around. But to stand there and complain about it was, I think, what smacked of ugliness to many people who saw or read about the aldermen complaining.
A raffle for their district.
Exactly. Right?
Oh, raise no, but funds. For themselves. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm still, I need to log on to my Twitter and call them out.
Well, yeah, and especially Alderman
it's annoying.
Alderman Millie Santiago is the one who from the 31st who particularly went off the handle and was complaining that these are lousy tickets and we deserve mm-hmm. this. And the sense of entitlement by these people is unbelievable.
Well, and the quote I saw is Mike Zalewski saying, "He's like, we're not a third world country. We can." I'm like, what?
Yeah, we kind of are.
What does that mean?
Politically, we kind of are.
Oh, I'm sorry, you can't go to the game.
Yeah, I think that maybe it's a history and a culture of entitlement that you were saying, because maybe that for decades they've heard stories of what aldermen used to get, and they thought, oh, at least I get this, and then that is publicly taken away from them in a way that's also shaming. And I think the classier thing would have been to just sort of go away quietly and just let it be.
Yeah.
But instead of standing up in front of City Hall and having it on the record that, well, they weren't very good tickets anyway. Well, now what are you doing? It's all very strange.
I mean, think you sort of expect, like, to have the Hinky Dink and Bath House Johnny come back and have their little parties.
And it paints all of the aldermen, all of City Hall, with the same brush. Because I know that there are men and women that work very hard for the city. Yes, there are, Scott. Scott, stop it.
Aldermen?
Yes.
Really?
Aldermen and women who do their jobs.
All right.
There are 50 of them, correct?
Yeah, there are. There's what?
The fact that every single one of them, I think, is a generalization. I mean, she was speaking for herself. I wouldn't say that she was speaking for all the alder people. Would
a lot
you?
Of them. I'd say a majority.
I don't know. They would all have to speak up and show their own ugliness. Yeah. Hey, Joe, what do you want to share with us?
Hey, Carol. Hey, my hat's off to, you know, a little side here. Scott, your caricature about the Obamacare collapse, if you will, I loved it. Fantastic.
Oh, thanks. You know, I'm torn-ish. How's
Wait
that?
A minute. Hold on 1 second. I would like to look at the screen and say what it says here, rather than what Joe just went around the horn and did instead.
And I will verify, Patty, what you're about to read is the only thing I was told when I answered.
Pumpkin just jumped on the horn and said he wanted to say something about Kyle Schwarber and what he looks like. ... And instead, it was Obamacare, which, you know, we could say whether or not it was a result of the Affordable Care Act or corporate greed and the fact that Social Security was also a mess for the first 4 or 5 years. But what did you want to say about Kyle Schwarber, Joe?
Okay. Did you see John Goodman in The Babe, the movie?
Yes.
Okay. Schwarber reminded me like a young Babe Ruth without his little goatee, if you will, trotting to first base. He's a dead image of Babe Ruth, in my estimation.
You're not the first person I heard say that tonight.
Oh, really?
Yes, okay. I heard someone, and I'm not saying that you were. I heard someone at the bar say that. So you think that because he's kind of a big guy and the way he swings the bat, his confidence at the plate, are those the things that kind of feed into that? And it's really John Goodman playing Babe Ruth.
And he runs herky-jerky in black and white.
You're right on. Here's three things. The size of his bat. Normal bat is what? I forget what the ounces are. But his bat looks huge. And I think one of the commentators made a point for that, too. The way he trotted to first base, he just reminded me of John Goodman portraying Babe Ruth. And the old pictures showing him hitting that pointing right home run to right field, he was a dead image. It was just utterly amazing. It was like deja vu to me.
Oh, hey, Joe, by the way, thank you for the compliment, by the way.
Sure.
Yes, thank you for saying that Kyle Schwarber looks like Babe Ruth.
No, but you want to hear a piece of trivia on the John Goodman movie, The Babe?
Sure.
It was filmed backwards.
They had to flip it because he is right-handed.
He's right-handed, and they tried to teach him to swing left-handed. It just looked really awkward.
The same thing happened with prior to the Yankees with Cooper because Lou Gehrig was also opposite-handed.
Okay, gotcha.
So yeah, so the numbers on their uniforms were backwards, and they flipped the negative, and there you go. So all of a sudden, John Goodman's left-handed.
Phenomenal.
Here from last year of, Kyle Schwarber. This is from October of 2015. Babe Ruth reportedly called his home run while facing Charlie Rudd at Wrigley Field. 83 years later, another large, hulking, left-handed slugger did the same. They're comparing Kyle Schwarber a year ago to Babe Ruth.
Call it, though, did he?
Second inning, Kyle Schwarber gave the Cubs a little breathing room when he launched a shot that cleared the scoreboard.
Is that ball still up there? We had this discussion with someone recently. Is the ball still up on top of there? Or did they finally grab it? Remember, they kept it on top of there for the rest of the season?
The ball is no longer up there.
It's not?
No.
It was under Plexi for a little bit.
Yeah, it's been put up, it's been taken down, and then put back up, but I believe it's not there right now.
Ah.
Allegedly, he also called that shot. So,
wow.
So those comparisons,
really?
Yeah, those comparisons, I would say, you know, it's going to be some time before, you know, his numbers bear out how close he comes to Babe Ruth. The thing about Babe Ruth was that he was also a tremendous fielder and a pitcher to start with. That's what he was recruited to do for the Red Sox.
Correct.
So that's just a little all that stuff.
So I have corroboration there. I enjoy
yep.
that.
A lot of people. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, kiddo.
Thanks, punk, and talk to you later. Bye, Joe.
Adios.
Good night. Yeah, it's a very exciting night. I love Kyle Schwarber. I've asked a lot of people this question. There's an episode of Grey's Anatomy that I was reminded of the day that Schwarber was out this year when he had that run-in with Fowler when he got hurt and tore his ACL. There's an episode of Grey's Anatomy. It was the Kyle Chandler episode. Do you ever watch that?
No.
Esmeralda, do you watch Grey's Anatomy?
No.
All right, then. There's an episode. One of my favorite episodes is... This is so stupid. All I'm saying is I couldn't stop screaming. The moment they made the announcement that Schwarber was out for the rest of the season, I was in the bathroom because I was listening to the radio. So my family was scared for me because they thought maybe I'd fallen down or I'd hurt myself, maybe cut myself shaving, whatever. But I could not stop screaming because we were on a tear. We were doing so well early on in the season, and everything seemed to be going so well. This really felt like the year, so I'm so glad to see him.
Yeah,
in the
it really felt like, oh, here it comes. You know, we lose this guy, and
yeah,
what?
Who knew?
Yeah, I mean, great managing, great playing, great team,
and by who knew? My point being that who knew what the ramifications of that would be for the team? You know, like you never know what component is really helping out. You know, whether it's the energy or the you know teams. You know, sportsmanship, you know, maybe he's the guy that really gets everyone pepped up in the dugout. You don't know what's going to be the element that changes everything. So believe me, I'm more than thrilled that the Cubs not only were able to carry on without him, but exceeded, they thrived and were unbelievable to 103 wins this year.
I just
year.
Think it's to walk around the city and to see people, I mean, so excited, so happy, so jazzed. You know, I don't know that I've ever experienced this in any city I've ever lived in.
Well, even the celebration after we won the pennant, everyone was expecting rioting. Everyone thought it was going to be mayhem.
I was watching on TV, and I don't know if you remember, the crowds were lifting up the police barriers, and you saw them going across, being like, you know, crowd surfed across the crowd, and you're going, oh, man, here it comes.
Yeah.
No, they just didn't want the barriers. They just and so they moved them out of the way.
It didn't seem to be any worse than the Irish St. Patrick's Day
parade. Nine arrests? They figured it was... What? How many? I forget what the final number was. It was like over 100,000, well over 100,000 people who finally flooded Wrigleyville, and 9 arrests. That's amazing.
Well, and I think part of that is no matter how young you are, you know the importance, the magnitude, the historic weight of this, and I think that has an impact on how people are celebrating, and I kind of love that. You know,
the first game we had friends over, and they were both natives of Northern Ohio, so they were Indian fans. And it was fascinating to watch them, too. Don't forget, they haven't won a championship since 48, which you kind of go, boo-hoo, 08. You can't top that. You cannot.
Right, exactly.
Oh, and by the way, 1908.
Right. There's nothing like that. That's a long shutout.
But it was just to see them have a victory, too, was just, there's something about sports. Let me ask you this. Why are sports important to us? Because long story made short, a friend of mine posted that I actually did a cartoon essay, which you should go to the Chicago Tribune and read, about people who who had family members who didn't live to see this, you know, died in the, and he posted that his mother was he's sorry his mother didn't live to see this, and when she passed away, her head was resting on a Cubs pillow.
Oh,
I think that's great. And my wife, who I love above all others, but has a weird quirk about sports. She kind of almost resents them because she's, that's sweet and kind of weird. I go, weird? Why is that? That's not weird.
But to her, because for her sensibilities, which she is drawn to.
No, she's just wrong.
Okay.
No, come on.
You're just wrong. I have a lot of friends who I have a friend.
Is that
who,
right?
I have a friend who posted the other day, when I hear two people arguing about sports and one of them says, you want care to make this interesting? I always assume they're about to change the subject. That's what my friend just posted. And he just could care less about sports. And that's just, you know, that's what makes the world go around, is people with different sensibilities.
Why are sports important? Why do we love it so much? And we do. My take is that, A, it's soap opera for men. Mm-hmm. Not to exclude. But it is. It's he makes this much money.
Look,
he's hurt. She's, you know, he's doing this. He's doing that. And so it was the Provence for it was perceived to be the Provence of men for many, many years. So, but the second
I'm enjoying your backpedaling. Go ahead, just keep going.
I'm not backpedaling at all.
Yeah, the Provence. Anytime you use Provence, you're trying to be all elegant about. Well, no, I mean, I know now that women like it, but you know,
it wasn't. I mean, look at the video. I mean, watch the old films.
Women
from
have
the
been
1945
fans.
World Series.
Sure, you can look in the stands, and there have always been women in the stands with their fancy hats and their dresses and things like that.
Very few.
Maybe a bit greater numbers now, but okay, that's not.
Regardless, look, my point is, what brings us together?
Let me tell you something about healthcare. More of this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. We are flying the W. It is so exciting. The Chicago Cubs have won their first World Series game since 1945. Joining me is Scott Stantis, who is a Cubs fan because John Cass told him he was.
Yeah, I was a Cub fan. I can tell you, I was back in the dark days of 09.
Is that how dark it was for you? We also have something really fun to give away tonight. We have a bat giveaway. We have to commemorate the Chicago Cubs making it to the World Series. Big Time Bats has given us one of their officially licensed team signature bats to give away. This limited edition full-size bat will have the facsimile signatures of the Cubs team roster and the World Series logo. Everyone can buy the Cubs World Series bat and see more of their collector bats at bigtimebats.com. But right here, 312-981-7200. I have a question for you. Let's see. I'm trying to think of. You know what? I have one that I know the answer to. So I think there's going to be a lot of people who know the answer
and
to
you're
this.
Smart.
It's a two-part question. You have to have the answer to both of them. 312-981-7200.
Can you say no Googling?
You can. We can't monitor for that kind of thing. So you know. So I can't. I'm not gonna. I'm gonna know by how quickly someone calls for this World Series Big Time Bats commemorative bat that they are a fan. This is within our lifetimes. This has been in the last 30, 40 years. What day did the Chicago Cubs play their very first night game? And the second part is, what happened that night that was unique? And if you can tell me the whole story, because a lot of us were watching that game, tell me your memories of that night when the Chicago Cubs played their very first night game at Wrigley Field. It was amazing. I'm starting to tear up a little bit because the trajectory of the Chicago Cubs changes that night. We were one of the last major league teams. We were the last major league team because it changes the way the schedule is set up for everything.
Well, it changes what made the Cubs beloved by the country was that every kid could come home after school, turn on WGN America on their cable, you know, basic cable, and watch the Cubs. And so you had generation after generation of people watching this because it was on in the only team that was still playing in the afternoon.
By the way, these people, that's how you know they didn't Google it, because they all remember that night. It was amazing. It
and
was
I got
wonderful.
To, I'm such an old poop. I didn't like it.
You didn't like that they
I was
went
an old
to the lights?
Poop then.
My dad was too. I mean, like, my dad grew up in the neighborhood. My dad grew up at Clark and Diversey right there in Lincoln Park. And he thought, you know, that was the one thing he loved about Wrigley, because that was his childhood, you know, home field. And he did not like it either. But Gary, were you watching that night?
Well, it was a long time because you're asking me if I was watching. I was waiting for it.
You didn't watch the night? Because I had my TV on the whole time, because something very specific happened that night. What night was it?
It was August 8th, 1988.
And
I think the lottery was going crazy with 8888 that night.
But you need the second part of this question to win. What's the second? What unique thing happened that night?
Well, it got rained out.
That's it. Congratulations, Gary. You win a commemorative bat from Big Time Bats. Yes. Well, and if you've been watching the game, Gary, do you remember they put out the tarps? And at some point, the Cubs just got bored, and they started using it like a big old slip and slide.
Oh, man.
It was.
Now you're refreshing my memory.
See?
Yes, I remember. Slip and slide between second and third.
That's right.
Did they get any pitches in?
I don't think they got. I think the whole game was. Well, I know that it rained. I'm pretty sure the whole game was called on their very first assist. Because here's the thing, Gary. You know, here's the thing. We're Chicago Cubs fans. We're like, of course that happened. Of course, when the entire country has their eyes on us, of course we're going to get rained out. So there you go, Gary. Hang on the line. Thank you so much. Are you excited about the Cubs being in the World Series?
Oh, yeah, that's one. You know, that 8888 is another curse that's gone.
That's gone, yep. All of it. It's true. It felt it that night did kind of feel like a curse. That's exactly why we were like, of course this happened.
Of course.
Of course we can't have our first night game like regular ball players. We can't have anything nice.
You know what was interesting is the build up to the winning the pennant. I think there seems to be a collective sense of relief and now excitement about being in the series. But the idea that this is the Cubs, how are they going to screw it up?
Stop it.
No. The build up to the National League pennant.
I know. I never had that, not the whole season.
And you said, don't do it when I mentioned it then.
Yeah, I did. I have been all in. Our job as fans is, our job is to believe, to have fun, to be excited. Because I love Joe Maddon's theory, his whole philosophy of, it's a game. Never let the pressure out exceed the pleasure.
Oh.
I'm just saying.
And try not to suck.
And also that. And that's my philosophy in life. So congratulations, Gary. You have won a big-time bat to commemorate the World Series. And, again, that bat will have the facsimile signatures of the Cubs team roster and the World Series logo. Everyone can go to bigtimebats.com to see that bat and more of their collector bats at bigtimebats.com. So I've given away our two commemorative bats this week. I'm very excited.
Nice.
I know. I want to give things away. So later on in the week, we will have Engelbert Humperdinck ticket giveaways as well.
Is he going to be in the studio?
That's a good question. I just got. Did you hear me get all Latina on there, Esmeralda?
Good job.
That's a I don't know. Did you see Javier Baez with his Smurf outfit? He had
what was that?
It was both cute and sort of a little bit too much.
It was adorable because then I saw him fixing his pants and he had things under the pants
well. He was rolling up his pants and he saw his stirrups and his socks and I was like, do you have long johns on?
I think he did.
Maybe it's a fetish outfit.
Maybe. There you go. I'm not so mean. Am I that mean? Scott, I'm not that mean.
No.
She's so mean. Wait a minute. I am excited is what I am. I'm thrilled the Chicago Cubs have won their first World Series game since 1945. I think at some point you just think, well, that's never going to happen. You know, you live with it and you cheer on your Cubs, win or lose. You have some seasons where you get more emotionally invested, you know, last couple of years, especially when Joe Maddon came in. We knew something different was happening. Yeah. The minute he had his press conference early that morning and he bought all the press a beer and a shot at like 7 in the morning. And we were like, oh, wait a minute. There is a new sheriff in town.
Well, think about it. This guy took the Tampa Bay Rays, the Devil Rays, to the World Series.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, okay, if he can do that.
Right. Imagine what he could do here with owners that were willing to do what it took. And with ups and downs, with a public image of, you know, whether it was the battle with the rooftop owners or with the neighborhood. And I think that we were all, you know, look, things needed to change. We needed to be a world-class baseball organization, and I think the Ricketts have done that. Joining us on the line, we have, can you pronounce your name for me?
I don't want to get Kateri.
Kateri, I'm Patty. Kateri. Pleasure to meet you. Hello.
Hey. You guys are so funny. You want to talk about a diehard fan? Hello. Here I am.
Hello.
My family are buried at St. Boniface. Their spirits are dancing. I mean, it's right down the street from Wrigley Field. So we grew up. So a couple of things. First of all, who said about the women at the games in the 50s and 60s? I'm 65.
Scott. 65. I'm pointing at Scott.
I'm
he was
saying
the one that said,
that the numbers are much smaller, significantly fewer than there are today.
Listen to me.
Listen to her. I'm turning your mic off. You go. Go, Kateri.
In the 50s and 60s, most women were stay-at-home moms. They had ladies' yeah. day. Men were bringing home the bacon and all that chauvinist stuff. What I'm saying is we got to go to the games all the time. Women filled the ballpark. And they were like
during the day games. So, right.
Yeah, with 3,000 people. So we got to sit in the box seats because the ushers were like, yeah, you can come down, you know, from the, you know, the upper deck. So there you go. I mean, but really, women were at the
games. Oh, I didn't say they weren't at the games. It wasn't, you know, denied. I'm just saying that, especially if you look at the films they're showing from the 1945 World Series, the audience is very, 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 very
right.
male.
And, right.
No, and listen, on what? Little girls couldn't play.
Totally different.
I'm sorry. I spoke over you.
I'm sorry. Yeah, no, by the 1950s, it was totally different. But I get it, right after the war and all of that.
Well, even going into when I was a kid growing up, girls didn't play in Little League, which was preposterous. We had girls who played on when we played during break in school. They were way better. Well, certainly better than me, but way better than most of the other boys. So it was a sexist
culture.
Where did
you grow up, though? Where did you grow up?
San Diego, California.
Okay, good. So in Chicago, though, we played 16 in softball. So we played, now it's all soccer, but we played four nights a week. So in Chicago, we played softball. Hardcore, yeah. No glove, 16 inch.
Yeah, I don't get
it. It's part of our DNA.
No, that one's rough for me. I got small hands.
My grandmother was born in Chicago, a mile from south of Wrigley Field in 1897. She was 11 when they won the World Series. And she used to always say, I don't think it'll ever happen again. She would have been 119 last Sunday.
Aww. So happy birthday to Grandma.
It's like, you know, well, she's dead now, obviously.
I know, but, you know, in memory.
No, but all of the spirits, but here's the deal. You were talking about the first, I don't know if you said this because I didn't, they said to turn off the radio, but the first night game was not the first night game because I was actually there and it was 8888, but it was called after 3.5 innings. So I don't know if you got that.
So they called. So the game was called and they were playing slip and slide on the tarp.
Okay, so there were some pitches. They did have an opening pitch. They did. You said
they played 3.5 innings. It was called after 3.5 innings. And so it was not an official game. So the first official night game was actually 8-9-88.
8-9. So it was the official full game that was completed under the lights at Wrigley was on 8-9-88.
Yeah, because the game was called. It wasn't an official game on 8-8-88. Right. But I still have my tank top with the tags on. I think it'll bring some money someday.
You never – well, after this season, it just might. Well, I'm so excited for both of us. And Terry, can you hold on the line? How many pizzas have we given away? I haven't kept track, Craig. Have you? Do we have one for Kateri? We're going to give you a pizza from Lou Malnati's. There are over 40 locations in the Chicagoland area for the best pizza, and we will send off a gift card. I don't know if I'll be there in time to have a deep dish pizza, you know, over the World Series games, but enjoy your Lou Malnati's pizza, and thank you so much for sharing your memories. Ron's on the air. Hey, Ron, what did you want to share with us?
Hey, Patty, how you doing? I got 3 points. Actually, the first point, that lady did confirm that, as I told your producer. Yes, they did play 3.5 innings, and it was called. And ironically, I may be wrong, but somebody did get a home run, and, of course, that did not count. But, of course, they didn't play a complete game, so it all those stats and everything is wiped out. So that was – so, yes, they did actually start pitching and all that. There was a first thrown pitch and all that. Second point I was going to make, though, a big controversy was a lot of people don't remember that first couple of weeks at Wrigley, they had some problems with shadows and the lighting.
Yes, I do. I remember that.
I remember seeing that on TV.
Yeah, a lot of people forget about that. It did take them now, that I don't know the exact time period, but I want to say at least a couple of weeks before they got it right, because some of the ballplayers, you know, with the nooks and crannies over there at the old park, you know, with you know, when they first set it up, they did have problems with the lighting. Yeah. And the third point I was going to make is that here's another thing that a lot of people don't know. A lot of people do. But Wrigley almost got lights back in the early 40s. The old Wrigley, the original owner, was willing to, and just about, he was stubborn for many years to put in lights, but he was going to finally put in lights in the early 40s. And you can look this up. He was going to put in lights, but then, of course, there was a little thing called World War II, and he donated all the metal to the war effort.
Oh.
A little bit of trivia. Look that up. It's true.
I have no reason to doubt you. Go ahead and look that up for me, Scott. Will you look that up? Kidding. That's amazing. I love that.
Actually, the Cubs could have had lights during the World Series back in 45 if it wasn't for the war.
Oh, Well, there you go. Well, so many things would have been different. Oh, that's a remarkable story. Thank you so much for sharing that, Ron. Appreciate that. Go Cubs.
So many
great stories. And I know you were asking during the news, what makes the fans in this town, what separates us from other towns that have, whether it's sports teams or playing in championship series? I think it's the history. I mean, Ron was sharing a little bit of that from World War II. Kateri and her family, you know, just the idea of her family dancing, you know, from their graves at St. Boniface.
Oh, yeah. Cemetery. No, I mean, the legacy of sports in this town is so deep and runs so deep. And it's, you know, it's really pretty much, I was going to say the incorruptible, but then we had the 1919 White Sox.
That's the White Sox.
There's that. That's the South Side. We don't know that. But things like,
and honest to God, you know, Shoeless Joe Jackson, he had a .375 batting average, only one questionable throw to the home plate. I still think that they're, you know.
And the only home run in the series.
And he tried going to Comiskey. He sat outside of his office trying to tell him this was going down, and Comiskey didn't want to hear about it because then who knows if he had money on the game. Just saying. And that also corruptible.
Yes.
Yes. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Okay, here's something else. I mean, you know, I love flags. I collect flags. I have like 400 flags. It's a sickness. And I admit it. I'm not seeking help, though.
You flag collector from way back.
Yes, but the W flag. Do you know the history of this thing?
Do not take one of these.
They did a great.
These are not for you to take. You can't have that little one. You cannot have the big
one. I like
the
little one, though.
You cannot have the cardboard one. You cannot have these. Go ahead. Please? What were you going to say about your these W flags in the
history?
Do you
know what the history? The Chicago Tribune did a great story on this, and it's fascinating. Do you know what it stands for? It actually did not stand for W. They've had this flag since the teens.
Okay.
The 19-teens. Yeah, that's right.
It does not stand for WIN?
It does not. It stands for the Wilmington Cruise Line, which was the ship that went from Wilmington to Catalina Island. When Wrigley bought the island, he started spring training there. And he brought, when he owned the Cubs, and brought the Cubs there. So it was the W from the ship.
Really?
Yeah, look it up. Well, and the Chicago Tribune had a
As you see,
story
me fact-checking
yes.
your story. History
yeah,
of...
And the flag looked a little different. And in fact, in the 40s, I did a cartoon essay called The Broken Cub that ran in the special section of the Chicago Tribune for the World Series. Mm-hmm. And I have the flag. And the W was actually white on blue in the 40s.
Oh, that's kind of fun.
And if you look back further, it was a shipping. And everyone also thought it stood for William Wrigley. It did not. Or it kind of did and kind of didn't.
This Wikipedia page is too long.
Okay.
I can't possibly.
Well, you can go to the Chicago Tribune story, which is fascinating.
Yeah. No,
but isn't that interesting?
I am not seeing anything about this cruise
And they've had that for years. And they've had it since the teens. And then they, of course, brought it back to Chicago. And it eventually was flown when they won. And the L flag when they didn't.
Wikipedia is not saying that.
No?
No.
Okay.
But where'd you get your information
Chicago
from?
Chicago Tribune.
I believe the Tribune over Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Completely. Well, can you go in and fix this? Go and fix Wikipedia, will you?
You know, are you on Wikipedia? I've never looked you up. Do you have a Wiki?
I am not on Wikipedia. Am I? I don't think
I bet you are.
I bet I'm not.
I am. And they got a few things wrong, so I started to edit it.
Right.
And then at the end of it, they say, what qualifies you to edit this? And
I
say,
I am Scott Sanders.
It's me. And I got a note back saying, you're not qualified to do this.
Yeah, there's no, it's only under Zany's Comedy Club and Zany's History. One of the first performers at Zany's was comedian Larry Reeb. Zany's played an influential part of the careers of many artists, including Jay Leno, Jerry Seinfeld, Tim Allen, Roseanne Barr. And Patty Vasquez.
Oh, look at that company. Holy Mary. Whoa.
So that was courtesy. I think that Kogan might have written that, actually. So that was part of his obituary for Rick Hewitt, who was the owner for Zany's.
Nice.
Yeah. So I'm sorry, what were we saying about the Cubs?
That's it. That's the flag story. You can go to the Chicago Tribune and look up the story.
And find their story. Not the Wikipedia. I've never heard that before.
To corroborate the story. It's fascinating. It really is that, you know, that. How these things come about, and it's part of the history. And now, a family member asked me. They said, "I know a Cub fan. She lives down in the Panhandle, of Florida." And said, "What can I get him?" I said, "Get him a W flag." And she wrote back, "A what?"
Yeah,
no clue.
Well, and I have to say, I kind of took too long to order one online. I wanted to order a W flag a couple weeks ago, and that's the thing too. Is it like, you know, the bandwagon fans? I'm not one of, but I didn't have a lot of gear. I had my Jake Arrieta shirt from last year. I know I had the hats and a couple jerseys and things like that. But on my block, people have the W flag, and I'm like, where's my W flag? I didn't. I meant to. If one of these is missing, and you see me flying a W flag on my block, then you know that I may have stolen one from the Allstate Showcase Studio, where we are hanging out talking about the Cubs' first World Series victory. since 1945. More to come after this and during the weekend when the Cubs bring it home to Wrigley on 720 WGN.
Dan Epstein is the author of several great books, including Big Hair and Plastic Grass, A Funky Ride Through Baseball in America in the Swingin' 70s. He's also contributed to a list of the greatest horror films of the new century. We'll talk Cubs and scary movies with him beginning at 2:15 a.m. Nick DiGilio, overnights, 720 WGN.
Wow, Tom, we talk about great high-end designer looks on the Mr. Fix-It show, but to see so many at once here at the Edge showroom is amazing.
Hi, Lindsay. The Edge showroom at Builder Supply Outlet features high-end designer kitchen and bath concepts without the high-end price.
Your expert designers really listen to customers and turn their dream kitchen and bath ideas into reality. And with the holidays quickly approaching, I hear you're rewarding those who plan their new kitchen now.
Absolutely. Purchase new kitchen cabinets and stone countertops now, and you get an upgraded 16-gauge stainless steel sink, a $500 value, free. But don't wait long if you want your dream kitchen to be ready for the holidays.
For all the details, come to the Edge Kitchen and Bath Showroom at Builders Supply Outlet, just 5 miles east of the Oakbrook Shopping Mall on Cermak Road at 25th Avenue in Broadview.
Or visit BuilderSupplyOutlet.com.
Quality and savings are what you get at Builder Supply Outlet.
Troy Murray here. For nearly 120 years, Chicago's own Nuveen has worked to live up to the highest standards of investment excellence, committed to delivering lasting value, whatever the markets may bring. Like generations of Chicagoans, they've watched our Blackhawks strive for excellence, whatever the season may bring. At Nuveen, they couldn't be more proud to support our champion Blackhawks as they work to keep Chicago the home of hockey excellence and bring the cup back to our city in 2017. Visit Nuveen.com today.
Bears fans, grab a copy of the Chicago Tribune at Jewel Osco this Sunday to collect your 2016 Chicago Bears Fathead Tradables. Collect all eight now through October 30th. Placing a loved one in a nursing home is one of life's most difficult decisions. You deserve only the best care for your loved one in return. Sadly, nursing home negligence is real and it's a serious problem. Neglect and abuse of the elderly happen every day. The law firm of Conasec and Dillon wants you to know that nursing home negligence can cause serious, life-threatening medical conditions like dehydration and malnutrition, fractures, infections, pressure sores, and even death. If you suspect a loved one is a victim of negligence or abuse in a nursing home, call Conasec and Dillon. The law firm of Conasec and Dillon will advise and help your family through the painful ordeal of injuries or death caused by nursing home negligence. Conasec and Dillon understands that entrusting a loved one to a nursing home is one of life's most difficult decisions. Protect your loved ones. Call Conasec and Dillon at 630-262-9655. Consultations are always free. Call Conasec and Dillon at 630-262-9655. You're listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. On this drizzly evening, we are in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, Scott Stantis, and we are just basking in the glow of the Chicago Cubs' first World Series win since 1945. That's just, you know what? We can stop saying that. Their first World War... You know what? I have to do the whole thing.
Okay,
their
over.
First World Series win. It's just, I mean, we're on our way to the to all four. We have to win three more games.
Yeah.
Three more games.
That can't be that hard. And look,
it
look,
seems
look,
very
look
hard.
You just do with your fingers. That's a W.
W. Three more games. I have my blue nail polish on. So I'm a little geeky tonight.
That's okay. Geek is good. Okay. I think it's wonderful. I think it's this
so
has been
much
so
fun.
Much fun.
So fun.
We're going to talk about weed sometime?
We are going to talk about weed. You want to talk about, did I send you that article?
I did. I just finished reading it.
You read it. See, that's what happens. We just, you know, you're multitasking. I did not multitask. I have been in the state legislature of Illinois and listened to debates. And here's how far we've gotten. Obviously, we have passed legislation covering medical marijuana for certain criteria. There are, like, epilepsy qualifies. I believe PTSD has been added to the list. There's a list, and I'm sure you can Google what medical situations can qualify you for
seizure disorders.
And, and I think that people need to be informed. I think that there are a lot of medical care providers who don't necessarily steer or advise their patients that that's an option. And do some research because it can be very helpful for many people. So that's how far we've gotten in the state of Illinois, is that there are certain qualifications that are now approved to you can obtain medical marijuana if you have a card. It's a long process. But in other states, obviously, it has been passed as recreational use in Colorado and
Washington.
I believe it's on the ballot for California this year.
It's on, I think, 13 state ballots.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Including
Mississippi and Arkansas.
It will be a very long time before it's on the Illinois ballot, which I think.
Why? No, you know what? May I jump in? Arizona, we were out there recently. I gave a speech at the University of Arizona, and then Jeannie and I took time off and celebrated our 35th wedding anniversary.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
She deserves a medal.
Aww.
But they were having one of the major battles there is to have recreational marijuana.
Uh-huh.
And there's a bunch of ads against it. And I was wondering who would be behind that. And you know who it turns out is behind fighting tooth and tongue against legalizing marijuana for recreational use?
The pharmaceutical companies.
More specifically, the ones who produce opiates.
Oh.
Now, stay with me on this one.
As long as I'm not on my opiates, I should be able to. Yes.
Yes. Because marijuana is used for it's very good for pain management in a lot of instances. It's an anti-inflammatory, mm-hmm. which is non-invasive. It's non-steroid, of course. It has some good applications. It's also not, as some would paint it, a gateway drug to heavier drug use. You know what is?
What?
Say it with me now.
Oh,
yes.
Opiates. Yes.
Opiates are a gateway to heroin and other use drugs that
they're an addictive controlled substance.
Yes. Yep. But they are also a billion-dollar industry, right, which these guys are going to spend a ton of money to fight against.
Well, I mean, it seems like a situation of if you can't beat them, join them. Before we carry on, I want to make sure we address an important issue. I don't think the W stands for weed, and Kevin wants to make sure I know how to get my W flag. Kevin, where can I get a W flag?
Right in your neighborhood at Paterno's Liquors and the restaurant.
Really? They've got 3x5 outdoor flags?
Yeah, those, the guys that sell the T-shirts and stuff in those little tents.
I haven't driven by that intersection. Are they set up there during the days with T-shirts and stuff?
Yeah. Went by there yesterday.
Because I know I saw...
They have one by Harlem and Higgins also.
Okay.
At a gas station over there.
Because I saw one over by... I believe it was Foster and the Eden's Expressway over by there, by that gas station.
Oh, okay. There's one. Yeah, they got them all over the joint.
Yeah.
So
there you go. Do you have are you flying your W?
No, I don't have a place to put it or whatever, but.
Your living room wall. That works. Sure. Right over your bed. That's where we should all put it. Okay. Right over our bed. Winning.
Can I ask you a question real quick? Who was that guy you were talking about that? It was a friend of yours or either babysit for you, Quarters?
Quarters Boyle, yep. John Quarters Boyle, who was... Did I ever tell you this, Scott? Do you know who Quarters is?
No.
So John Boyle and actually his brother Jeff are two legends in my neighborhood. I grew up in Norwood Park. John was, at one point, and he was indicted and found guilty. He used to work for the Brinks that would collect all the quarters from the toll booths and stuff, and he may have snuck a few of those away. And his nickname is Quarters. And then later he went on to be investigated, indicted, and found guilty as part of the Silver Shovel bribery scheme.
Okay.
It was also part of the city. And his brother Jeff, who was a lieutenant with the Chicago Fire Department, was also investigated, arrested, and found guilty, I believe, of, I know that he was setting fires around our neighborhood, including Immaculate Conception over by there on Talcott. Yep. But Jeff and John were both guys.
Cubs fans?
My friend, I don't know about that, but my dad was friends with their dad, and John had a business actually in the building that I grew up in. He used to own a sporting goods store kind of on the first level. And my dad would ask him to watch me, and he used to take me for doctor's appointments, and I hung out with Quarters.
Wow. So,
thank you, Kevin. Thank you for asking. I love sharing my Chicago stories.
Sorry to get you off your track of what you were talking about.
It makes my life a little
colorful.
Go Cubs. It makes life a little colorful. And Chicago. So very Chicago.
Well, you know what happens? You start talking Chicago. You start talking out of the right side of your mouth.
I know. Over there. Yeah, you. So by, you's, go to the. By you, did you go to the game by yourselves? What time are you back at? Eh? It's my dad. It's so my dad. Thank you so much for calling, Kevin. I'll see you around the neighborhood. Yeah, that's a that's my neighborhood. I grew up in a you know part of the city where if you knew somebody, like let's say you're a teenager and your very first time getting pulled over for a ticket, you take a left when you don't realize you didn't see the sign. You've never seen the sign that says no left turn between 4 and 6 p.m. over by Dare on Avondale and Nagel, and you see the blue flashing lights go. And, you know, your dad just says when you go up to court, say no contest, and maybe you'll get your ticket dismissed. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. And it's a rainy night, but in our hearts, it's all sunshine because the Cubs have won their first game of the World Series. We went down, you know, it was a rough game last night, but we came back swinging hard, including a great performance by Kyle Schwarber, who I was so excited to see. So good. Everybody was great.
Arrieta did. I mean,
oh, so good.
I mean, what? No hitter through the fifth inning?
I don't know. I remember there being people on base.
Well, there were eventually.
But it seemed like it was early. Okay. We won 5-1. Yes. And we're excited about that tonight. We are having another conversation that I think is equally important tonight. I have been in Springfield for a lot of conversations, a lot of arguments about legislation. And one of the things that came up last year was by Will Guzzardi, who is a representative in Chicago, who wanted to introduce some research on the ramifications of legalizing marijuana, recreational marijuana in the state of Illinois, what the financial ramifications were, what the health ramifications would be. And it was roundly just shot down. I mean, by a margin that they almost brought out this trophy when your bill is dismissed, like, with an overwhelming no, you win like this turkey award, and like people make the sound of missiles, like you're going to go down, we're going to shoot the, you know, this whole thing. And I was kind of surprised because I thought it's not even open for a discussion in the state of Illinois. And Mark Rubin, we have you joining us. You've been a guest pharmacist for Steve and Johnny. Will you be our guest pharmacist as well?
Certainly.
I love that. What are your thoughts on legalizing pot?
A couple of things as far as when you talk about the dissemination of it, like you brought up before, as far as a gateway. It's only a gateway if you consider when it's illicit, the people you're buying it from are interested in getting you onto something that they can make more money off of that's more addicting.
Right. It's in their best interest. Right.
If that's the only avenue, and there's a lot of research going on marijuana as far as different products. There's a lot going on in Europe right now as far as for uses for cancer and other conditions, that you're getting the benefit of the medication without the side effects as far as euphoria and everything else. You're actually able to help people a lot more in refining it. Now, the downside of it that I have with legalization for fun is the fact there are a couple factors that come into play. One, it slows the maturation process in making sound decision-making. It's like the reason you don't have your car insurance lowered until you hit the age of 25 is because your reasoning ability is poor.
Right.
Marijuana negatively affects that ability. And so you're not really growing up to make sound decisions.
And Scott was mentioning off the air that in Colorado, one of the big problems they're having is the young right. youth, the high school age and, you know, teenagers using marijuana.
Right. Has gone up, you know, obviously a lot.
So that's to Mark's point. And yes. By the way, is it Dr. Rubin? Should we be calling you Dr. Rubin? I feel...
No,
okay.
But that's okay. So that's one major point, that if you want to legalize it for recreation, fine, after the age of 25, before.
Oh, that's interesting.
I kind of like that, too.
Now, the other aspect of it is if you're planning on having children. There had been research done in the past, remember reading, it has a negative impact on sperm development. It doesn't seem to be affecting the issue with the females because your eggs are basically formed when you're born. Actually beforehand, but men, they're always generating, and it can actually form defective sperm. So you would need to definitely educate the patients, understand, if you're planning on having children, lay off the stuff.
Now, and how about you go ahead.
I was just going to ask now, with the sperm, it deforms them, does that mean the sperm genetically is altered, it's hurt, or,
yes.
or just creates, the male is less likely to impregnate a woman?
That I never gotten specifically into from what I read a few years back. I think it's effective possibly having children that are born with defects. because you're affecting the DNA and the structure because you have it while the sperm is developing, which it's like all the cells typically in your body that are constantly reproducing brand new. When you're affecting the development process, you're messing around with the system. So if you allow that batch to be flushed out of the body to be off the medication for a while, then you'd be generating healthy sperm. But if you're on it during the time, you could have a negative impact on the development of your children.
And how about when you're pregnant? I'm guessing that's also a dangerous situation to be in.
Medication, because they'll never do studies, needless to say, on a woman in pregnancy. It's like, okay, let's try her in marijuana and see if there's an outcome on this.
Right, right.
Well, but they can do it, you know, postpartum, can't they? At once, you know, they can sort of ask women. I guess that would be kind of imposing on their privacy. By any chance, did you get high during your pregnancy? And how many women are going to be honest about it, too?
Exactly.
Well, they're running commercials.
The thing is, and your studies are, your best studies are what's called double-blind studies, that neither the patient nor the person administering the medication knows if they're getting placebo or active medication.
Right.
And that way you're getting a clear picture, not anecdotal. Well, we saw a correlation here. Well, that correlation means nothing. And sadly, that's a lot of the garbage you see in the media for a lot of over-the-counter products about, they make claims about it, the homeopathic. It's like, oh, it's been used for years. It's wonderful. Okay, do a double-blind study, and let's see the true pro-con on it. And because of the cost of the studies, they don't do it.
Right.
So it's to look retrospectively where you've got no control makes it very, very difficult to really assess that.
Well, they're running ads now in Arizona. We were out, I just mentioned that we were out there, and the ads state, the studies have shown that in some parts of Colorado, over 50% of the babies being born are being tested positive or are tested positive.
Wow.
for marijuana in their system, which, you know, the mother was using it, obviously, when they were pregnant.
Right. And it doesn't necessarily mean they were using it. It's sort of like secondhand smoke.
They were exposed to it.
Yeah, but you're being exposed to it. So it's just one of those things that secondhand smoke causes much COPD as a person who's a cigarette smoker if you're constantly exposed to it. So it's sadly one of those things. I was going to be in a study for marijuana back when I was in pharmacy school, except for the fact where the pharmacy school I was at was in not by Roosevelt Road in Chicago. And it's an area that you want to be able to be very alert to get to your car. And they'd be doing a block on the heart that it wouldn't respond to. So let's say you suddenly started running, heart rate wouldn't increase. Hmm. So you could theoretically collapse.
Oh.
So I decided, okay, yeah, an interesting study, but not in this neighborhood.
So, oh, too funny.
I decided on self-safety, we'll take a pass on that one. But because U of I, the University of Illinois Pharmacy School, does a tremendous amount of pharmaceutical research, especially with drugs from plants. It's one of the leading in the entire world on doing things like that. But, it's just certain areas, if you're going to have certain things done to you in order to see just the effect of the drug, you want to be in an environment that you're not going to have to worry about when you walk out of the laboratory for your own personal safety.
Well, I wanted to ask Patty, when she was down in Springfield and they introduced this legislation, who poo-pooed it? Who fought against it?
Well, predominantly I would say verbally and publicly, the Republican side of the aisle was, you know, and they would say things like, well, if I want to know, you know, the financial benefits, then we can just look to Colorado. And Representative Guzzardi was like, sure, let's do what Colorado did, which got a big laugh, meaning, well, let's do whatever Colorado did, which it means legalizing it. There's a lot of resistance to it that it's not a good, you know, use of our funding of money in the state of Illinois.
There's no funding. It's a business. All you're doing is allowing people to open a business. You are taxed.
Well, the research. This was for the study. A policy study. Because and Dr. Rubin, I'm going to call you doctor, even though you've asked me. I told me I don't have to. I just feel like you've earned it. What do you think? What is the primary cause to holding people back? Is it the cultural stigma when it comes to medical marijuana? And I'm talking about medical marijuana first. I mean, recreational in the state of Illinois is beside the point, but it seems like it's really the stigma. Is that your sense?
I think part of it is because presently, for the most part, the active ingredient that gives you the most benefit is also exactly the same chemical, the THC, that gives you the psychological effects that people are taking it for recreational purpose. And that's where the research is right now, as far as modifying those chemicals so you can get the benefits of them without the downside, so people can function normally. So if you're using it in the medical use, you don't want to have their comprehension affected and their ability to function affected in a negative aspect when you're just trying to restore somewhat normalcy to their lives, whether they've got HIV, whether they've got cancer. You want to bring them to a normal functionality, not have them negatively affected by a medication that may improve their nauseousness, may improve loss of weight and everything else, but at the same time, they're not going to be fully functional in society because of the impact of the side effect of the medication.
So at this point, we have been able to get prescriptions like Xanax and codeine to the point where people have normal functionality?
Well, the Xanax is one thing, and that, to me, is overprescribed anyway. I mean, a lot of these drugs are. As far as codeine and all that, I like what the Surgeon General said. For all the billions being spent by the drug industry, why aren't you spending it on better methodologies for pain management? Because your heavy narcotics really have limited benefit to these people with true pain.
Right.
Well, and we mentioned during the break here that, again, back in Arizona, one of the states, there's, I think, 13 states now that have legalization of some at one level or another on the ballot. But in Arizona, they have a really obviously well-funded professional opposition to this, and it's being underwritten by the pharmaceutical companies, specifically the ones that produce opiates, because the marijuana can be used as a very effective tool to fight for pain management, like you just mentioned. It's one that's not addictive, one that is not a gateway to other drugs. It's very cynical, but it's driven by a billion-dollar business that wants to remain a billion-dollar business. Would that be pretty accurate?
And to me, in some aspects of that, it's them wanting to keep people hooked. Now, one thing one's got to consider is if you have a person with legitimate pain, I never consider them addicted. Because if you're a patient with cancer that's intractable, if you're a patient with spinal issues that's intractable, I'm not worried about the addiction. I'm more concerned with them that you're not really getting to a medication that the same dose is going to be used over time. The dosage increases greater and greater and greater, and their quality of life deteriorates. And then you get the psychological negative aspect from healthcare professionals, both on my side of the counter as well as from the physicians, forgetting that you're treating a patient. For those that abuse it because they're trying to get high, get hooked because of that community, well, that's a separate issue. But for people with chronic pain, our pain management system is really sort of fouled up because the drug industry really has not come forward with anything innovative to really help alleviate their discomfort, to give them any quality of life, to improve the life that they have remaining.
Right.
And that's really sad. I mean, my heart goes out to these people that it's sad. I mean, I had a minor spinal issue for a short period of time that I go to the emergency room, and fortunately after 6 weeks of physical therapy, I've been perfect since then. But after you've submitted that kind of pain and then you've got the reality of it, then you've got a different perspective when you look to these patients who've had spinal injuries, who've had cancers and that are devastating, and yet what's pharma done to come up with something to improve their quality of life? Nothing.
Right. I agree with that. And I wish that there was more. I mean, I wish patients had access to more information than what they, because your physician, your primary physician, or the specialists that are taking care of, whether, as you mentioned, if it's a spinal situation or if you're going through chemo and cancer, it seems like every step of the way, there's a limited amount of information and access to knowledge when it comes to your options for pain management. I have a friend who is dealing with breast cancer, and she was told that because of her age, it wouldn't be a good idea for her to try medical marijuana because this is what they said to her, the TCP, Dr. Rubin, yes, settles in the brains of elderly patients, and that's why it wasn't recommended for her. Does that make sense? My sense was that it came more from a lack of knowledge of having experience with, advising patients to other avenues of pain management.
Yeah, well, one of the things that bothers me when I see pain management is there's an antidepressant that really isn't used anymore because of the drowsiness side effect. It's amitriptyline. when it was used for depression, the dosages would be like 100, 200, maybe 300 milligrams. For pain management, it's only 25. And what it does, it changes your pain threshold, allowing you to potentially use less of the narcotic because you're sensing less pain, therefore you need less medication.
Ooh.
I don't see it being used. And I don't understand why, because for years, I mean, that became a common mainstay as combined therapy, so you could use less of the narcotic to help but have a better quality of life. And because you're using a very low dose, you didn't see as much drowsiness. I mean, when you treated someone for depression, you had to dose it up very slowly because of the amount of drowsiness, dry mouth, dry eyes, and all that sort of thing. It was and would still be as effective of your new antidepressants. The difference being the new stuff we have today is effective in a couple weeks, not 3 months.
Hmm.
So you're able to really address the people's depression much quicker with generally fewer side effects. But the thing is, they found it was effective for helping to manage pain where you could use less of the narcotics. Now, that can still change over time if you've got a chronic pain, but I'm not even seeing anyone being started is that as a starting point, combining the two.
Why is that?
I sometimes wonder business models.
Yeah.
Oh, you think?
Well, and I mean, you know, I go to the cancer specialist and says that, you know, and they say that these are the medications that we prescribe. And at the same time, you see a pharmaceutical rep standing at the window, you know, bringing, you know, all kinds of goodies for the receptionist and the doctors there. You know, in your mind, you go, and here this other patient was told not to bother with medical marijuana. You have to wonder what kind of, you know, allegiances the medical professionals have.
A couple of things to address. One, there is one thing to consider. Whenever you're adding more drugs, greater potential for drug interactions.
Right.
So that's something you always have to be very, very careful of. Let's say you're going to use amitriptyline. That does have a bunch of drug interactions. So not to ignore that factor.
No, I agree with that.
Drug reps don't have the power they had anymore.
Oh, good.
It's really...
I'm just suspicious.
How many unemployed drug reps there are today.
Yeah.
That has really dwindled the doctors because the insurance industry doesn't feel anybody who's a provider has any value anymore. Whether you're a pharmacist, a nurse, or a doctor, they think they're the all-important thing. The doctors are having to crank out patients just to make ends meet because of all the overhead they have because of the insurance industry. They don't have time to see a rep. I mean, used to have all these dinners and everything else. Those have evaporated. I mean, you just don't see that anymore. And if a doctor is seeing and getting guidance from a rep, a lot of times they've got to, if a doctor is going to be speaking for a drug company, they have to post on their office wall that they're actually a speaker for a specific drug company.
Well, so let me ask you this. I mean, so how do you explain the overprescription of opioids now? I mean,
Sorry. Sorry, I thought my volume was off. Go ahead.
Apparently, Patty's just watching Patty on her smartphone.
Sorry, new video just dropped. And it actually just launched right now. How do you
account for that you're watching yourself.
That was really weird. I apologize, everyone involved.
No, but how do you explain that the over prescriptions, prescribing of opiates now in this country?
It's convenient. You get an immediate response. And one of the things you see in the patient population is they've always wanted something now. I mean, you go to emergency room. I had a patient who, fortunately, the mother said, you know, don't fill this because she went to that specific ER because they would prescribe something for her. It was an antibiotic. She just automatically wants an antibiotic. And a lot of times the doctors, because of, again, what's happened with the insurance industry, that everything is becoming like assembly lines, they'll write to get on. The thing is, in Illinois and across the country, we do have a program for monitoring the patients. It's a prescription monitoring program. It's usually a week behind, but you can check in. You can punch in the patient's birth date and their name, and you can see what drug they've gotten and where they've gotten it from when it comes to any narcotic. Not just narcotics, but, you know, diazepam and Xanax and all that, any controlled substance. And pharmacists use it constantly, especially if we don't know the patient and we're suspicious, that we will run a report and take a look. It's like, okay, They don't live here. They've hit 5 different doctors, 14 different emergency rooms. No, this is not legitimate. And the doctors all, you've got to be a physician, a prescriber, or a pharmacist to have access to the system. It's not open to the entire medical community. Mm. Now, whether it's being utilized properly all the time, that's another issue, but that's where electronic prescribing is evolving, that is going to get to the point that in the future, anytime a doctor writes for a prescription, it's going to automatically access that system nationally to see what's going on. So before the doctor even closes out their prescription, he will have in front of them if they've been seeing multiple doctors, multiple facilities.
So many more things I want to talk about. Dr. Rubin, do you mind if we get your information and perhaps schedule you for a night to talk about all these important issues that I think affects everyone?
Problem.
Oh, wonderful.
Not a problem.
We've been talking to Mark Rubin. He's been on Steve and Johnny's show, and we are so grateful that you called in tonight to talk about the legalization of medical marijuana and other aspects of the pharmaceutical companies and prescription medication. And we will talk to you again soon. Do you have a website you want people to know about? I'm not sure if I don't want to.
Well, there's multiple websites. There's multiple websites. My specialty is actually pulmonary medicine with allergy and asthma and COPD. So if people have those pulmonary issues, there's a number of, there's 4 organizations I belong to. One is the American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, Immunology. It's real easy. It's 4azandi.org, so quadai.org. Also the American College of Allergy, Asthma, Immunology, which is ACAAI.org. And what's great on both these sites, it's not just for healthcare providers. They have patient information. So if you have different pulmonary conditions, it gives patients knowledge they need to have sound decision-making processes. They also guide you to people who are board certified in the specialties. Another one is chestnut.org, which is American College of Chest Physicians. So there's general pulmonary medicine. And then there's thoracic, thoracic.org, which is the American Thoracic Society. That's the 4th pulmonary organization for the country.
Well, there you go.
Those are the major medical ones. Another time I can give you one for parents with kids with asthma. excuse me. But there are some outstanding medical sites that you get reliable information, not where you're just Googling stuff.
Right.
The other thing is National Institutes of Health. It's our government agency, and the NIH has tremendous amount of resources for the general public also.
So cool. I appreciate all the information. We look forward to having you on the show very soon. We're going to turn it over to Nick D in just a moment. So more after this on 720 WGN. Scott.
Yes.
Game 3 on Friday night.
Woo!
World Series. We are now tied 1-1.